Sawubona and good day. Welcome to All Things Africa, the podcast devoted to events and news across the continent of Africa. Today is April 26th, 2020, and this is your host, Chris, for today's session of the All Things Africa podcast. Today, we'll be updating news and events from across the continent, including developments in Lesotho, Liberia, Zimbabwe, Uganda, Namibia, Ghana, and Angola. So join me now as we take a closer look at events across the continent on All Things Africa. Starting out today, major developments having taken place this past week in Lesotho, the Southern African kingdom, completely surrounded by South Africa, the small mountainous home of the Basotho people, has seen unusual events, not so unusual for Lesotho, but unusual in terms of peace and security across the continent, especially in Southern Africa, as the current head of the government, the Prime Minister, Thomas Thabane, who has refused to step aside despite concerns that he may have been involved in the murder of his ex-wife by his current wife, who's been implicated in the murder of his ex-wife, who died just a short time before he took office, refuses to step aside. So earlier this week, in an effort to break an impasse and get him to step down as Prime Minister, the President of South Africa, President Cyril Ramaphosa, sent delegates to Maseru, the capital of Lesotho, hoping to convince him and to get the government to work out a deal. The government worked out a deal offering a secure retirement for the Prime Minister. The 80-year-old Prime Minister, Tom Thabane, was supposed to step down in July, but strange events have been happening, to say the least. Recently, in March, he ordered the security forces and the intelligence services to investigate ruling party rivals, people from within his own party that he had concerns about were moving to displace or remove him from office. So he used the intelligence and security forces to investigate them last month. And then this past week, on Saturday, he ordered soldiers and armored vehicles into the streets of the capital of Maseru to restore order against what he termed rogue national elements. The forces were pulled back on Sunday, but this is yet one more disturbing sign about what is happening in Lesotho. As I mentioned, in response to this, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa had sent delegates to discuss this with the government of Lesotho. The ruling party, the All Basotho Convention, of which the Prime Minister is a member, is seeking to oust him and get him to step down before his term expires, or before he intended to step down in July, I should say. His current wife is Masaya Thabane, who is 43, and she married him 2 months after his previous wife was murdered. She's been implicated in this murder, and a lot of folks seem to think that the Prime Minister is also involved. So that was earlier in the week, but then just a couple of days ago, on April 23rd, he has given no indication that he will step down at all now, or perhaps even in July. He's told the independent weekly Lesotho Times the following: "People who I don't report to are setting the time for my departure. They have no right to do so." This is giving the entire listening audience in Lesotho and in South Africa grave concerns that Thabane has an intention to stay in office beyond the July date that he had previously suggested that he would step down at the end of July. So we shall see what happens. His previous wife, Lipolelo, who was 58, was murdered on the 14th of June 2017 in a shooting in which no one has ever been convicted. However, his current wife, as I mentioned, who he married 2 months after her death, has been implicated in this, and this is now taking place and playing out in Lesotho, one of the few places on the planet yet to report a confirmed case of the Wuhan coronavirus, or COVID-19. So there you have it, events in the mountainous kingdom of Lesotho in Southern Africa. Other momentous events around the continent. In Liberia this week, the former defense minister, Mr. Brownie Samakai, and his deputy for administration were convicted by a judge and sentenced to 2 years in prison unless they make restitution on a amount of funds that were reportedly embezzled from the government. This included $675,656.35 from the Armed Forces of Liberia Retirement Fund and $460,000 to the government of Liberia's account. So well over $1 million reportedly embezzled from the government of Liberia and the Armed Forces of Liberia. The ruling was handed down on Thursday this week by Judge Gibizet, who cited Chapter 50.5 and Chapter 15, Section 15.4 of the Penal Law of Liberia. Misuse of public money is a felony in the first degree. Now, the maximum term for this could have been 10 years, but it is at the discretion of the judge. So former Minister Brownie Semakai and his Deputy Minister of Administration, Joseph Johnson, were convicted, and both must make restitution or face jail time of up to 2 years. This is an interesting development. Economic sabotage, it's been labeled by some as the actual charge. What I wonder about this, having worked in Liberia and been responsible for the reconstruction of the Armed Forces Library under Security Sector Reform for National Defense while I was there, I find this all quite odd. The measures and constraints and controls that were in place as far as the budget and expenditures for the Armed Forces Library and the Ministry of Defense gave us no indication that this sort of activity was taking place. There was, of course, no retirement fund that was available for soldiers during my time in the reconstruction of the Armed Forces Library. So these events all happened long after my departure, and I don't know what happened afterwards, but I do find the entire situation rather suspicious, and I wonder what's really happening here. Did Minister Semakai actually embezzle this money, or do we see this a case of political opportunism to go after opponents and former members of the Ellen Johnson Sirleaf administration? I'm not sure what's happening here, but I'm sure we'll learn more as time passes. Nonetheless, this week, momentous events in Liberia, as the former defense minister, Brownie Semakai, a rather powerful political figure in Liberia, has been convicted of misuse of state funds, public funds. Shifting our attention to Zimbabwe in southern Africa, this week, Crispin Rambu, a local councillor in the eastern town of Chipinga, who was a member of the opposition party, the Movement for Democratic Change, was called in by the police, and he was charged with insulting President Emmerson Mnangagwa and undermining his authority. Reportedly, Rambu sent a WhatsApp message to a local group which unfavorably compared Mnangagwa with South African President Cyril Ramaphosa in the handling of the coronavirus COVID-19 pandemic. So the quote here is that from the message, Ramaphosa just announced a 500 billion rand, $26 million stimulus package. Seeing him addressing and comparing him with ED, you won't doubt that we are having a fool for a head of state, the message said. Now, ED is a reference to Emmerson Mnangagwa. His full name is Emmerson Dambudzo Mnangagwa. So I deal with an awful lot of Zimbabweans who like to perpetuate the myth that the Western countries, and particularly the United Kingdom and the United States, have sanctions against Zimbabwe. This is simply pure fiction. It's a matter of public record. One can simply look up the travel restrictions and constraints on investment for those 175 or so individuals from ZANU-PF who are complicit in or accused of human rights abuses and political intimidation, corruption, embezzlement, and things like that, as well as a handful of state-owned enterprises, which the U.S. government sanctions or puts restrictions on so that the money does not benefit those who've committed crimes. Now, in response to the constant misleading narrative that we heard from Robert Mugabe, and since his removal by a coup d'etat, we hear from Emmerson Mnangagwa and other members of the ZANU-PF government in Zimbabwe, there are no sanctions against Zimbabwe. There are restrictions on those who have committed these sorts of crimes. Now, I ask folks, and I mention here, that Mr. Crispin Rambu is a member of the opposition party, and the conduct of the government in arresting him for a matter of what should be considered free speech is very troubling. And if members of ZANU-PF wonder why these restrictions remain in place after 20 years and get renewed repeatedly under successive administrations, Bush, Obama, and now Trump, this is your answer right here. This is suppression of free speech. It's not even a private citizen. This is an opposition political figure who's making these comments. If you cow the speech of opposition political members because you are unable to stand up to the light of day, then you have a serious problem. And there is news for Zimbabwe. Shift our attention to East Africa now. In a rather important deal, in one of the first major oil deals in the petroleum industry, in the midst of the free fall of petroleum prices, in response to a dearth of demand across the world because of the coronavirus outbreak. In the midst of all that, what's happening now is that Tullow, an Irish company, has announced the sale of its stake in the Lake Albert oil project. Tullow, which has been an investor in this since the very outset of this over a decade ago, has agreed to sell its stake in Lake Albert Project for $575 million to Total. The French-Italian oil giant will purchase this. And this is part of an effort by Tullow to lower its debt, which is reduced it by $2.8 billion is the effort they're trying to make. So they're raising this year $1 billion to lower that debt, which is $2.8 billion. Now, Tullow, which was founded back in the 1980s to exploit or take advantage of African oil and gas reserves to make business there, saw a series of technical difficulties and missed production targets, according to news reports from Ireland. So last year, its chief executive did step down. Tullow famously was the company that was working this find in Lake Albert Basin when I lived in Uganda. And year after year, there was no pumping of oil. Nothing was happening as the Ugandan government kept it under control, trying to figure out how exactly the country was going to profit from this. But this project in the Lake Albert Basin includes also the Chinese National Oil Company, the CNOOC, or C-N-O-O-C, Chinese National Oil Company. Now, they're the third partner in this project, which is supposed to produce 230,000 barrels of oil per day. And they have preemption rights for their half of the stake that will be sold to Total. So no word yet from CNOOC whether they have issues with the sale or not. I suspect they will be okay with the sale, given that Total has far greater resources and deeper pockets than Tullow does. This should help Tullow clean up its balance sheet a little bit, but it will represent some tremendous lost opportunity in losing out on what could have been a lucrative and long-term project for 10 to 15 years at a minimum of extracting oil in Uganda. So for a company that spent the better part of a decade and the company that actually discovered this oil, these oil reserves in Uganda, this must be a bittersweet moment for them. Now, Tullow will get $500 million up front, and the remainder of the money will come after the price of oil stabilizes and rises back up. When Brent oil crude reaches $62 a barrel, then Total will pay the balance, which is much higher than the current price of $22 a barrel. Reportedly, Tullow is also trying to sell its stake that it has in oil fields in Kenya, but so is Total. So it should be interesting to see what develops there. So this is rather momentous, big news, particularly for Uganda, but also for Tullow and the oil industry. The sale of these rights to oil in Uganda, a project that they have been working on for a number of years. Meanwhile, the European Union, shifting our focus to Namibia, back in the southern part of Africa, the European Union has donated $172 million, which is about 8.4 million euros or $9.6 million, to help the government of Namibia fight COVID-19. This is a grant, and it comes with additional grant monies that have been handed over to the government of Namibia to help it in its fight against COVID-19. The government of Namibia finds itself strapped for cash. Speaking of COVID-19, issues and topics, let's shift our focus from Namibia to Ghana and West Africa. In West Africa, on Friday, April 24th, a U.S. Air Force C-130 aircraft from the 86th Airlift Wing in Ramstein, Germany, arrived at Kotoka International Airport in Ghana to deliver medical supplies. Now, this included 2,500 kilograms of medical cargo, and these supplies were donated by the U.S. Navy Medical Research Unit 3. Ghana Detachment, which is working on medical research in Ghana with Ghana's National Influenza Center at the Noguchi Memorial Institute of Medical Research, the Kwame Nkrumah University of Science and Technology, and the Kumasi Center of Collaborative Research in Tropical Medicine. All of these institutions are working in collaboration with the U.S. Navy Medical Research Unit to look at tropical diseases. And so what they have delivered includes materiel on the April 24th delivery for state-of-the-art level 2 field hospitals, and also they're delivering equipment for testing for COVID-19. And so this should prove to be helpful. The medical supplies included ribonucleic acid extraction kits, reagent viral collection swabs, universal and viral transport media to collect and store specimens. All of this is intended to help Ghana up its ability to test for COVID-19. As I mentioned, they've also delivered two state-of-the-art level 2 field hospitals, one of which is already in operation since the 4th of February. All of this is part of the U.S. government's Africa Peacekeeping Rapid Response Partnership Program, or APREP, which is designed to help African partners prepare peacekeeping capability. Now, in this case, you might be wondering, if we're responding to COVID-19, that's not peacekeeping, why would the U.S. government provide these supplies? Well, they're providing them because this capability allows the government of Ghana, including the Ghanaian military, to have the capacity to respond to medical disasters, which is part of the writ for the military in Ghana to help with natural disasters responses to that. So shifting our attention once again from West Africa back to Southern Africa, Angola has extended its state of emergency until the 10th of May in response to COVID-19. This is the second extension of the state of emergency, and it's for a period of 15 days, starting from the 25th of April, so it runs through the 10th of May. Now, this comes from President Lourenco, who extended this over concerns over the COVID-19 virus and its impact on Angola. Angola's economy has been in the dumps and in recession for the past 5 years, and the Wuhan coronavirus or COVID-19 comes at a particularly bad time for Angola and is not helpful. But on a more positive note for Angola, there's news that Chad, who borrowed money from Angola in 2017, they borrowed $100 million in 2017. And rather than pay back cash, Angola agreed to take cattle as payment in kind, so essentially a barter deal. And effectively, Angola agreed to take 75,000 head of cattle. Now, these cattle aren't for slaughter, but rather to help Angola build a cattle herd. This is particularly important for Angola because it's spending as much as $350 million a year to import meat to feed its population of 30 million people, as it does not produce sufficient meat to feed its own population. Angola, a country the size it is, with a population as small as it is, it's remarkable with the amount of savanna and prairie land that it is not feeding itself. So the idea is to import these cattle from Chad, a total of 75,000, to build their own domestic herds. So we'll see how this goes. With this consignment of 1,176 cattle, so 1,176 cattle, that brings the total that Angola has taken in the past month to 4,500. So that leaves about 70,500 more cattle as part of the barter deal with Chad. Chad's two biggest exports are, of course, petroleum and cattle. And so this works well for Chad. And if it goes well for Angola in developing its own herds, it will also have been a good deal for Angola. Interesting to see that barter arrangement taking place. This is from a deal from 2017, so of course it predates the Wuhan coronavirus and has absolutely nothing to do with it. While we talk about this, take a closer look in Southern Africa at South Africa, where the president, Cyril Ramaphosa, has announced a day or so ago, 2 days ago now, that South Africa would begin to ease the extreme lockdown conditions beginning May 1st. They've created a level system, level 1 through 5, and they're currently in level 5, which is the most restrictive version. On the 1st of May, they will shift to level 4, and many things will be allowed to happen, including reopening of the mining industry. Some light manufacturing will be allowed. A number of schools will open with limited classroom size, yet to be specified. And for cigarette smokers, some really good news, as cigarette sales will resume in South Africa. I'm sure a lot of people who've been missing out and going through withdrawal, hoping to get their cigarettes, will get them. No news on the vape community, whether they'll be able to buy their, whatever it is they use for vaping, their fluid or whatever it is. I'm not a fan or a subject matter expert when it comes to vaping, but I do know that it's popular in South Africa. However, alcohol sales remain banned in South Africa, as do they remain banned in neighboring Botswana. While we're on the topic of Botswana, just this past week, finally, the parliament, all 63 members of parliament, were cleared, having not contracted the Wuhan coronavirus as a consequence of an infected medical worker having visited the parliament to test the parliamentarians a few weeks back. When it was discovered that the medical worker had tested positive for COVID-19, all members of Botswana's parliament, 63 members, voluntarily went into self-isolation and quarantine, and that period has just ended, and all of the members of parliament were tested and apparently have tested negative. Now, that includes President Masisi, and for him, this is a rather difficult situation as it was his second quarantine. Those of you who pay attention to events in Southern Africa may remember that on the 21st of March, to celebrate the 30th anniversary of Namibia's independence, President Masisi, along with President Lourenco from Angola and Emmerson Mnangagwa from Zimbabwe, all traveled to Windhoek to take part in the events taking place there. And while they were there, it was discovered that there were active cases of COVID-19, confirmed cases in Namibia. So on return, he voluntarily went into quarantine. So he did that quarantine for 2 weeks. And as soon as he came out of it, was potentially exposed, but as it turns out, was not exposed to COVID-19 at the parliament. And along with the 63 parliamentarians, went into self-imposed quarantine. And so now you have it, Botswana. Both the parliamentarians and the president have come out of their quarantine. Quite a crazy development of events around the continent. There still remain relatively few confirmed cases of COVID-19 across the continent. The two largest numbers of cases being in Egypt and South Africa, which, depending on what time of day it is, one will surpass the other for the number of cases. Both now around 4,000 confirmed cases, with Egypt at about 250 confirmed fatalities, South Africa under 100, about 79 last count. Close behind them follows Morocco and then Algeria, and after that the numbers drop off significantly. But the total number of cases confirmed across the continent still remains relatively low, weeks and now months into this global pandemic. Nonetheless, it's not the public health crisis that's causing the greatest harm at the moment, at least as far as we're aware. It's the economic carnage being wrought across the continent of Africa. Africa, which supplies raw materials to China in particular, copper, coal, iron, and many other natural resources, as well as agricultural products, is no longer able to ship those products there, or the products that they ship there are no longer in demand, as many Chinese factories are in reduced or shuttered operations as a consequence of its own situation dealing with COVID-19. So African markets are finding it difficult to send things abroad. Those in Africa who are major oil producers, including Nigeria and Angola, Sudan, South Sudan, and now Ghana, as well as in North Africa, natural gas producers, Algeria, are finding disappearing markets for their products. And this is putting a major impact on the economies of Africa as well. Diamond sales have dried up around the globe. This affects Botswana, Angola, Sierra Leone, Namibia, and South Africa. And so as African producers find dwindling markets for their products, they're also finding that they are not getting the inter-Africa trade that they were hoping for under the African Continental Free Trade Agreement. And that is something that people had a lot of hope for in 2020. But as the world deals with the COVID-19 disaster, it will prove to be a very difficult year. Most recent estimates from the Amalgamated Banks of South Africa, or ABSA, they have predicted that in the second quarter of 2020, South Africa's economy, which has already been in recession, would contract by at least 23.5%. This is a phenomenal decline in economic activity, in large measure owing to South Africa's draconian lockdown measures, which for nearly everyone means you cannot leave your home, and that's now been a month. This is a very difficult time for folks in South Africa as they try to deal with the Wuhan coronavirus. But they're not alone. These restrictions and the shutting down of borders and international flights has had a dramatic, devastating effect across the continent. And a continent that was already challenged by events is finding that 2020 is not the wonderful year that we hoped that it would be for Africa, with the celebration of the African Continental Free Trade Agreement being put into effect and this being Africa's year. Events outside Africa now have sabotaged that, and it looks to be quite a painful year. And so those are the events in Southern Africa and across the continent. Once again, let me recap. In Lesotho, we have a situation in which the Prime Minister, Tom Tabane, refuses to leave office and refuses to be pushed out of office. And so we'll see what happens there in the mountain kingdom of Lesotho in Southern Africa. Will he step down or will he be forced aside? Time will tell. Hopefully, we won't have another coup attempt in Lesotho, which there is a long history of. Beyond Lesotho, once again, back to Liberia. Big news in Liberia, where former Defense Minister Brownie Samakai was convicted of misusing public funds, including $600,000+ from the Armed Forces Liberia Retirement Fund and about $460,000 of Government of Liberia funding. And his deputy minister for administration was also convicted, as well as controller general. In Zimbabwe, a opposition political local councillor has been accused and charged of undermining and speaking ill of the sitting president. This is not a healthy sign for democracy. and raises questions about Zimbabwe's legitimacy when it comes to the rule of law, yet again, and adhering to its own constitution. In Uganda, big news as Tullo Oil sells its stake in the Lake Albert Basin oil project, which is projected at 230,000 barrels of oil per day. They sell it for $575 million to the French-Italian oil giant Total. First major oil deal in the midst of oil prices cratering. Arguably, this is a very good deal for Tullo, given the situation, and far better than they probably could have hoped to have gotten for their access to that oil. So pretty good deal for Tullo in the midst of a global pandemic that's taking place and a drying up of the oil market, literally. In Namibia, the government has received a grant from the European Union of about $9 million, slightly over $9 million, for COVID-19 relief. Ghana has received a shipment of medical supplies, focused primarily 2,500 tons of medical supplies focused on the COVID-19 crisis, testing, reagent, and kits and things like that to help Ghana deal with testing for the virus. And in Angola, the government has extended the state of emergency till May 10th. And in an unusual situation, the government has also decided to work on bartering with Chad, who is providing them with cattle. In the past month, they've now received 4,500 head of cattle, which will be used to jumpstart Angola's own domestic herds in an effort to hopefully overcome the perennial shortfall in meat for Angola. And so, ladies and gentlemen, this has been the inaugural program of All Things Africa, a podcast devoted to events across the continent of Africa. This is your host, Chris Wyatt. I'm a retired U.S. Army colonel with 36 years of service, and I've served across the continent of Africa, having lived in Tunisia, Liberia, Botswana, Malawi, Niger, Mauritania, Uganda, and Ethiopia. And so I like to discuss these topics with folks to bring Africa to your attention. And we hope that Africa will do better and we'll all survive this year. And hopefully folks here in the United States and abroad will take a closer look at Africa as a potential investment location going forward. A continent today of 1.3 billion people that by the year 2050 will have a population of between 2.3 and 2.6 billion people, with a middle class somewhere between 800 and 1.3 to 1.4 billion people. Those would be people with disposable incomes. Talk about a large consumer market. That would be 3 to 4 times the current size of the United States' entire population. What a lucrative market for Africa and for those who seek to do business in Africa. And so with that, I thank you for tuning in. I appreciate your time here on All Things Africa. We'll catch you next time. And just remember, folks, hang in there. We're all going to get through this COVID-19 mess, hopefully in one piece.